We're talking about your training, well, further training with C Company of the 11th Battalion Highland Light Infantry at Southend. And one thing we missed out on, that's my fault, was the Bren gun, which I presume you'd learnt before. But if you could tell us about the Bren gun, and then I believe you have a story coming out of a Bren gun training session.
Yes, well, I, as you say, I learned pretty thoroughly the Bren gun in my initial training. When we were down there...
What did you think of it?
Well, I thought it was, well, it never let us down from the point of firing. I know we only fired, I think we fired real bullets in training. But from the point of view of speed, we all got terribly good at it, in jumping down and assembling it and putting it together if necessary. And I was quite... I mean, I was always good with my hands, and I was quite happy the way I was using it, and that I'd always be able to use it correctly and do a good job if I had it. And that was the only weapon that the days of bazookas I didn't get round to for a long time. But the Bren gun seemed to be the only thing that I was ever going to help save my life or my rifle.
You did get, what about mortars? Were you introduced to
them? Oh, yes, I'm sorry about that. Yes, mortar, we had mortar training. We fired dummy mortars. That was interesting, of course. We learned to get the trajectory right and the...
Which mortar was it? Was it the 2-inch?
It was the 2-inch mortar, yes. It was a small mortar.
And how did you fire it? What was it like?
Well, all I can remember was having the sort of tripod, or not tripod, it was, what would you call it, a small anchor thing on fixed in the ground, and then this bowl up like this, and you inserted that, and you had a sort of a trigger movement, and the sergeant would call out, fire, and you just press. I think I can't even remember whether it was a lever. I didn't do very much of that. I mean, it was just know how to use it if I had to. But we never expected to use mortars.
Now, you mentioned off tape that something happened.
Probably changed my life. Oh, this is where Shorthand came in. The sergeant major was. What was it? He was lecturing on the Bren gun, and we were taking copious notes. And of course, I wasn't being clever, but I used to take all my notes in shorthand. So I wrote all this down in shorthand, and he wandered round, and he looked over my shoulder, and he said, "What the hell's that?" See? So I said, "Oh, it's Pittman's shorthand." He said, "Do you write shorthand?" So I said, "Yes." "Oh," he says, "I must tell the major. Officer 2IC in charge." He said, "The colonel will be interested." Anyway, he took me first to the captain. No, no, the captain of C Company, that's right, the captain. And he said, "Look, this chap, Cousins, trooper, what was I then? I was an infantryman. Anyway, a private, I became a different name afterward. Private Cousins." He said, "Private Cousins can write shorthand." "Oh, well, that's useful." He says, "Well," he says, "I've got a lot of notes I want doing in there." And this chap was a typical captain, Ian Campbell, you know, real Scott, real Campbell. And anyway, he said, "Oh," he said, "that might be interesting." He said, "Well, I'll have a word with the major in charge of the company." So he had a word with the major. Next thing I heard was, "Oh, report to the company office." I mean, I didn't move out of my digs or my barrack. Anyway, I went there and he said, "Oh, Cousins," he said, you can write shorthand." I said, he said, "Can you type?" I said, "Well, yes, I can do." He said, "We've got to have a clerk in these offices." He says, "I know you're trained to fight." He says, "But you'll have to fight anyway." He says, "I know you probably wouldn't mind missing a bit of training. A bit of normal training every day." He says, "If you come in the office here, you can do all the correspondence and all the donkey work." I told him by then that I'd been training in the surveying business and I had a fairly decent education, etc., etc. He said, "Well, if you can do that," he said, "particularly," he said, "I can dictate troops to you, or tactically, you know, the usual." And he said, "When I come back," and this is what I got. I got tutes at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes. Cousins, where's Cousins? Bring him out. Right. But anyway, I spent 2 months in that office.
Now, what were your duties in the company office?
Company office was, we had a Gestetner. That was the old, rolly thing for the duplicating. We received part one and part two orders from up the top. And
do you mean the company commander or the colonel?
No, we received part one at headquarters. We received part one and part two orders, and then I used to pick out and underline all the chaps from C Squadron that have been on two part two orders that have been transferred, etc. Killed, died, not too happy in there. Anyway, that that was my life then for a couple of months.
But you must have had more to do than that.
Oh well, yes. The colonel who the, not the colonel the. The captain. The major wasn't terribly interested in dictating letters. The major was a solicitor, and he enjoyed himself. So he used to get me in, and he'd dictate a few notes to some of the chaps, mothers and fathers, all that sort of thing, little condolences and things and that. Anyway, and I'd go out and type them. I had another two clerks with me, but neither of them, one was a corporal, one was a lance corporal, and I was the plain private. So he said, well, he said, I think we can give you a stripe. See, so I said, oh, thanks, I'll get a little bit of money. Anyway, I got a stripe, and I was a lance corporal then for a couple of months with him, doing all his notes and doing the office work generally. And
any other parts of the office duties you remember?
What could I do? I just...
Okay, we'll probably come across.
I can't think of much that I did in those in that office life. Later on in office life, yes, in the army, but not in that particular. When you can think, it was only a little company office. They were only interested in a few letters and somebody who could get them down, type them quickly, and he could get them away, and it saved him an awful lot of time.
Would that get you out of the rest of the training?
Got me out of the training. No, it didn't. No. The sergeant came in to me one day, I only remember this, and this is what changed my life again. Oh, he said, Cousins, he said, I see you haven't been on guard duty lately. I said, well, I thought I was exempt, sir. Oh, well, I'll speak to the captain. Said, oh, well, you better do the odd guard duty. So I ended up joining the guard, the other six chaps, at... The Sun, it was called, I think, the pub, where the officers naturally met a lot.
Is this the pub that changed your life?
Yes.
Is this the... Right.
And I went to... And I was on guard duty by the telephone box, the red telephone box.
Now, why were you guarding the area of a pub? Was it just...
Now, why were we guarding that?
You made
a... No, pub. Sorry, it was... No, it was... No, the officer's orderly, well, their officer's room, they had an officer's room there.
A mess.
That's right, at the pub, and they had a guard always outside to make certain there wasn't any Irish things dropped or put at the back of the pub for them and that. So, we had to wander around the pub and do this. But anyway, this telephone bell rang. In there, and we were told to answer the telephone because it might be from headquarters who were up in Southend. I answered the phone, and I always remember that. The chap said, oh, I'm the intelligence officer. Who is that? I said, oh, Lance Corporal Cousins. He says, oh, what are you, guard duty? I said, yes. So he said, would you tell the major... And he said, I want you to write this down, he said, because it's quite a big message, he said, and I'd like you to get it correctly, see. So I said, well, I can write shorthand, sir. He said, yes. He said, well, anyway, and he gave me this long message. I read it back to him. He said, well, that was good. He said, what the hell are you doing down there? So I just said, well, I'm in the company office, but I'm on guard tonight. I said, they found out I could do shorthand, sir, and Captain Campbell had me in the office. Anyway, he said, well, you're not staying down there. Next morning, a truck arrived from Southend. Where's Lance Corporal Cousins? He'd spoken to Campbell. He said that lad is useless down there with you, doing a few odd jobs. And he said, I want him up here at intelligence. So.
To the intelligence section or to the intelligence.
Oh, that's the point. It was the intelligence officer who wanted me up there, see. And so naturally I thought, well, I'm going up to headquarters, that would be better. Anyway, I arrived there, went in front of him, and I went in front of the intelligence officer, that's right, and he said, well, look, he said, I've got seven intelligence staff here, he said. None of them write shorthand. He said, you'd be an asset. I said, well, I don't mind where I go, sir, if you want me. He says, but, he says, I've told the colonel and the adjutant, who was that time Major Dickinson, he said, somebody Dickinson now, he's still alive. And that Major, now who was it, Colonel Beckett. Anyway, he said, I mentioned to the colonel and the adjutant that you write shorthand. He said, and he'd like to see you. So anyway, I went in, the usual salutes, and he asked me, you know, what I was in civilian life, the usual, and I told him I'd been training and that I'd come in, as naturally. And he said, well, how would you like to come work in the orderly room, Corporal? I said, I'm all for it, sir, if you really want me. He said, well, you won't have to do too much training. He said, you'll still have to naturally do your bit. I said, all right. Anyway, I went, they found me a nice little billet, and I was in Southend for a couple of months there.
You'd been just outside Southend before?
I'd been right outside Southend.
Where were you before? Sorry.
Well out, past, nearly to Shoeburyness, which is well down the coast.
But you don't know the name?
But I don't know the name. All we knew it was the Rose and Crown, I think it was, the Rose and Crown, the pub. But it was a little village there, but we never knew the name. It was one of these things.
So when you went to the orderly room, you were still a Lance Corporal. What were your duties there?
Well, as soon as I went in, the orderly room sergeant, who was a staff sergeant with these things up, and he said, I understand you write shorthand. He said, well, so do I. So I said, that's interesting. He said, you know, can you really write shorthand? See, because, I mean, men didn't really write shorthand. They learned it, but they forgot it. I said, well, fortunately, I stuck at it, and I can write it really well. He said, good. He said, I'll give you a test. Anyway, he gave me a test on that, and he was happy about that, and a test on the old typewriter. And he said, oh, well, he said, I think you'll be useful to Major Dickinson, who was a legal man, and the fact that he's got somebody like you in his office, he'll be very pleased, because the colonel doesn't dictate anything. I said, well, that's better still. He said, you won't see the colonel except just to interview. I said, good. He said, but you're like Major Dickinson, I said, which I did. And he and I got on famously well, because my orderly room sergeant, he didn't want to take all this bump what I had to do for a few months.
This was the Toots thing?
The Toots, yes, that was going, yeah. Major Dickinson used to go out, and with the colonel, they go up to brigade and get some instructions, and you know, they do a brigade scheme and come back and give me this toot, taking about nearly a notebook sometimes. I mean, it was good stuff, but and that was it. Colonel Waddell who was the bugger, but he you'll come to that in due course. But he was in charge of the A Company at the time in those days. But anyway, I was happy there. I still had to go out on the occasional exercise.
Did you have any other duties in the orderly office?
No, all I did was take letters, type them all out, and eventually do the odd filing, of course. You know, we had our method of filing, keep the offices clean, and which was nice offices in they were in one of the hotels in the middle of South End.
What about the business of preparing a part one and part two orders?
Oh yes, sorry.
Could you explain what part one and part two orders were and how what you do? You know.
Well, part one orders was what was happening higher up and lower down. The major would go into the adjutant. The adjutant really did it. The adjutant would go into the colonel, hear all the dope verbally. Being a legal mind, he had it all packed with a few notes, and then he would come out, and he'd dictate all part one orders to me, which was all what was going to happen with our regiment, other regiments in the brigade, in the division, to give a sort of synopsis or a sort of a complete. Overall of what was happening in the regiment, what we were going to do, which was very interesting even to me. And I used to go out and type it. Now, part two orders was entirely different. Every day, each company sent up notes by Don R, to headquarters, showing...
Brigade headquarters.
No, to... battalion headquarters, to our headquarters, not brigade headquarters. I sent a note of their star, of their numbers.
Sorry, the company sent a note.
Yeah, each company, the ABCD company, sent four long lists of goings and comings, hospital, etc., etc. And I had to collate them and make them into a sensible part two orders, which I picked out all the, and anything we were going to play a football match, we were playing a cricket match, we were going to do this, we were going to do that. And this is what happened. And I did that, and I used to, I mean, naturally, the orderly room sergeant got them first. He'd have a discussion with his sergeant clerk. I was the lowly one. They'd get to me, but I had to do the work. They probably transpose them, put them out in sensible writing, and then I copy them on the old silks, you know, and then into the Gestetners, and then hundreds of copies off back to all round, and etc., etc. And the dispatch riders were always kept busy. I mean, obviously, there was back going up to brigade. And then some, I mean, those orders, of course, went up to brigade to know our strength. It was the company strength that was the main thing. And in time, I was one for drawing little maps and skulls and things, and not, you know, and I used to do everything very systematic as it helped me when I did get a company orderly room sergeant. But that was what...
Any other jobs in HQ office?
Only telling them I could play cricket as the season was coming on, see.
So that's where you
that's where... They put me in charge. Not, I mean, as a corporal, as a lance corporal. Fortunately, my orderly room sergeant was a cricketer, but he was also an excellent footballer. So cricket to him was a secondary nature when he could play football. But as the cricket season was coming on, he said, "Well, Cousins," he says, "I don't want to find out who plays cricket in the battalion." He says, "You do it." So I put a note in part one orders. Saying that we were going to form a cricket team, although we were a Scottish regiment. I knew several, I mean, there were 35 officers who by then I knew, because I used to have to do, that was another thing we had to prepare, a list of the officers going and coming in five copies of each, and I used to try and get them through on a pencil, but it was a bit difficult. Well, you know, it saved time. But anyway, I didn't type them. I had to write them all out. But you got to, naturally, with a decent memory, I got to know all the officers in all the companies. But I knew one or two of them, particularly a couple, that were really keen cricketers in my own company at the time. And anyway, that was what happened. So I got about 30 or 40 names come through, and I rang up one or two and asked them where they played for, and then anyway, I got about 15 to who I thought might make a sensible team.
Did you have nets to sort of pick?
Not then, no. We were not fortunate in those days. We had no nets. Our cricket practice, really, I got a bit fed up with it because I was trying to arrange another match with other regiments in the brigade, and I got bypassed. Nobody at that stage were very interested because we were on Southend. The Battle of Britain had started. We had the dogfights over Rochester, the back there. Anyway, and I still had to do the. I was down in a billet, and I'd been made up to corporal by then, and being a corporal, I was in charge of 10 chaps in a house down by the gasworks on the front.
So this is when you were doing the cricket thing?
When I was doing the cricket. And
I'll come back to the promotion. Carry on with the cricket. You said you were bypassed.
I was bypassed in as much as I couldn't find anyone wanting to actually get down to forming a team to play, because we had no whites, we had no gear. Being a Scottish regiment, the 5 and 4 for Yeomanry were gentlemen's regiments, so they had cricket gear when we. But the Highland Light Infantry didn't know what cricket was, except some of the officers. But they never carted around nets, cricket bats, and the usual. So consequently, there was no question of ever getting a field made out, although there were plenty of cricket grounds naturally in the area that we could have taken over and used. But so, in fact, I tried that summer to get cricket, but fortunately later on when we moved the regiment.
Right, I'll come to that end. So but while you were at Southend, no luck.
No luck with the cricket, but...
Did you get to play for other teams? I mean,
I did, but not in Southend.
Right, so complete blank.
Yeah,
there.
Complete.
It was a bit frustrating.
It was, because being an ardent cricketer, and I couldn't get a game of cricket. My mother and father came down from London to see me. That was just by the way. They came down on the train, and we had a day out. We made friends with one or two girls. Some of our chaps were billeted in the skating rink, so we all had our roller skates out and on that, which was good. But in fact, and I used to still have to go out occasionally and do the odd guard duty.
Now, what about this promotion to corporal?
Just prior to that, it was this, when I was down by the gasworks looking after these 9 jocks who all drank red biddy, or as we called it, the wine that makes them drunk. When they drink it at night and then drink water in the morning, it makes them worse. And that was on the one occasion I nearly, how I got made up to corporal, as in other words, because the people next door, the ladies next door, came round to me and knocked on the door and said, "Corporal, you know your chaps are running out in the garden naked with their bayonets and frightening the life out of us." I said, "Are they really?" I said, "I didn't know." I said, "I'm going to sleep." Anyway, I remonstrated with them, of course, and the Lance Corporal, I had to put on a charge, which could have ended in my death, but it didn't. But anyway, I had to put him on a charge. Next thing was, I had to appear on this charge against him. He lost his stripe, and by a strange coincidence, they decided that the major decided that I wanted that he wanted to send me on a course for future sergeant or officer or something. But anyway, I went on a cadre course.
Where was it held then? Was it a battalion course?
It was a battalion cadre course. No, there were other regiments. It was a brigade cadre course, I would say. But it was inland more, probably.
What sort of thing were they training you?
A lot. I went back to being a soldier for 2 weeks. But fortunately, one of my sergeant instructors was my sergeant, one of my sergeants in C Company. I mean, this is our coincidence. C Company, who gave me a lot of help, we had to swat up all the War Office books Incidentally, I had to read all ACIs and things like that, actually in the audio room and that. But when I was at this course, which was another funny thing, I was at the course, this sergeant helped me, particularly on, although I was good at map reading, he helped me even further. So I got a B plus or something like that, which was to get me up to corporal, which got me up to the corporal.
So
that's how I got the corporal, yes.
And what difference did it make being corporal?
Well, a little more money, of course. Being then made corporal clerk, which also meant that I got clerk's pay as a specialist, which helped. And but anyway,
did you find that people treated you differently when you were a corporal than say when you were a lance corporal or a private?
Up to a point, yes, I suppose they did. They called you corporal, of course. They called you corp. Most of the chaps you knew when you were their rank, you just didn't make any difference. I mean, you just. Thing. I mean, there's always the difference. It wasn't like the American Army. There's always the officer and NCO, even up to warrant officer. Although I eventually got not war substantive, but staff sergeant, warrant officer, you never got, although I made many friends when I got into the war with the officers, and then it was Christian names on the side and drinks, but that was a long time after. But this sort of thing, it was the gentlemen of England and Scotland and the rabble of London and Scotland, and that was how we out the HLI was. And I mean, you accepted it, but
did that cause a bit of unrest if the officers treated? Did they actually treat you badly?
No, they didn't treat us badly. They talked down to us. One or two officers were the kings. The MT officer whom I got to know because he took us, because I was a good shot and he wanted all the best shots and used to take us out rifle training and things, shooting up in the hills, all that which he liked. But one of my, one of the junior lieutenants I won't call him a sod, but he just made life a little unbearable until when I was out on guard one night, a nice fancy girl came up to me and said, "Do you know Lieutenant?" I better not mention names. "Do you know Lieutenant?" I said, "Yes." "Oh, is he married?" I said, "Well, I couldn't say." "You know him personally?" I said, "Yes, he's a bit up top." He said, "Yes, well, he's been courting me and I can't really get to know him really well." I said, "Oh, well." She said, "Is he coming on duty tonight to see you?" I said, "Yes, he'll be along in a few minutes." This was when I was out on the front at South End. And so that was how I left it. But those sort of little things happen. But anyway, what I was saying about this going on the course, that was an opportunity to get away from this lance corporal who was demoted, who was going to knife me. I mean, he was going to bayonet me the first time I got back to the billet.
Now, how did you know he was going to do that?
Because he told me. After the CO's hearing, and he was lost his stripe. And he said, "Well, the next time I've had a drink, I'll be after you." Well, I knew what that meant.
Did you take it seriously?
Yes, I did. And I was very pleased that I was sent away on that 2 weeks course and never returned to that particular billet. And he got drafted down to C Squadron, because he was in HQ at the time, and he got drafted back to C Squadron. And all I knew was that he subsequently got killed out in the middle, out there. But those little things happened. You could get on the wrong side of a Scotsman, and there's one other officer Scotsman who I'll tell you about later in the HLI, who I got on the wrong side of.